Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and I'd like to ask you, how certain are you that NDEs, near-death experiences, exist? You might have had your own, and then you're pretty certain about it, but how can you believe in all kinds of esoteric things that people have experienced because they're other dimensional? And so how much proof do you need? What kind of person are you about it? Do you really live in agreement with it, or you need so much proof that it's hard to convince you? So to answer this dilemma that many people have, and that those of us who are living multidimensionally and don't know why many people don't believe us, we're going to talk with our pretty frequent guest on Energy Stew, who really is an expert about NDEs, and we'll talk about the necessity to convince people that they exist. David Such, welcome back to Energy Stew. I'm so glad we could talk about this.
Thank you, Peter. It's a joy to be back here on the show.
So you must come across this often, not that we'd like to hear people look at us cross-eyed and go, you got to be kidding. There's no such thing.
Yeah, that's a common thing. Near-death experiencers come back. I had a client via my spiritual counseling that I just heard recently, and she had an NDE giving birth, you know, at the hospital, and she died and they revived her. And of course, first thing she did when she came back, she tried to explain it to the doctor. And he said, well, you just hallucinated, you know. So how do you prove that NDEs are real? Well, the way human beings demand proof, you know, something physical we can see or measure or touch, there is no proof. But I mean, by that same metric, there's really no proof that dreams exist. I mean, imagine if you were the only person in the world who remembered your dreams. And you tried to explain to other people, when I go to sleep, I have these other experiences and things that I do and people that I meet, these crazy things that happen, they would look at you like you're crazy. The only reason why we all believe that dreams are real is because we all have them and we all remember some. So
maybe we're all crazy.
Here we are. So, you know, in terms of proof, there really isn't. But I mean, it, just like a dream, when you wake up from a dream, you know, when you're dreaming, you think your dream world is real. It's only when you wake up and you realize, oh, this is much more real. And of course, it's the same with near-death experiences. When they wake up, you know, they leave their bodies, they say it's like waking up from a dream, and they're more real and more alive than they've ever been in their lives. I mean, the very first NDE that I heard, you know, is his wife asked him, well, were you like a ghost? And he laughed and he said, no, I was the exact opposite of a ghost. I was more real, more alive than I've ever been in my life. So, you know, proof. I mean, if you were in a court of law and there were 1,200 people that all testified to the same thing, that would be considered overwhelming evidence. Well, I've heard over 1,200 near-death experiences, and there's been people who've heard over 5,000, you know, Raymond Moody and people like that. And so proof, well, it's just based on the testimonies of the people who report them.
Right. And same thing with doing past life regressions, mm-hmm. and, or in between life regressions, which are even more fascinating because it's kind of like an NDE, because you're out there in other dimensions in between lifetimes, and you're certainly experiencing a lot of what people who have NDEs experience.
Yeah. And I recall one past life regression therapist talking about a patient that came in who was having a problem with a pain in their side and been to all these doctors, and they couldn't figure out what this chronic pain was in their side. And they had the past life regression. And it turned out that in another lifetime, they were a soldier, you know, hundreds of years in the past, and they were stabbed in the side. And this regression therapist kind of worked through that. And, you know, they did this release of that pain and the trauma that carried over into this lifetime. And that fixed the issue. The pain went away. So we can even carry some of those memories that can manifest in our physical bodies from other lifetimes.
Right. Actually, I've been having trouble with my legs in recent times. and some neurological issue. And then I asked this woman who is intuitive, as you and I are also, and she has her own shtick about, you know, because all of us intuitives, we're not always being having the same intuition. The universe is vast, and we receive information for all kinds of purposes, and we all have different purposes. So we all can tune in and see different worlds and different universes, et cetera, and different lifetimes, and work with different spirits out there. And so she tuned in and saw that in some previous lifetime, not that long ago, I was a young boy who got run over and lost my legs. And she felt that was the reason why my legs are in trouble in this lifetime. And it's interesting because my whole life has been about my legs. And that's why I was a serious, dedicated, competitive runner for many years, trying to make up for that past life where I didn't have any legs. But now it's later in life, it seems to be an issue. And it's kind of interesting that it's a life that's all about legs. But knowing it hasn't restored them yet. I'm not giving up on them. I have actually done some running recently, not quite the same as I used to, but a little bit to feel like I'm still, the potential is still there. So it's fascinating that the universe is so vast and we all have very different experiences in it, including NDEs. I think people who have NDEs are extremely fortunate. I would say that I would love to have an NDE, but I don't want to risk that it's actual death rather than a near death. So I'm not willing to test. But or the consequences of it, because sometimes they're based on trouble that doesn't fully resolve itself after the NDE.
Yes.
So it's, you know, there are blessings and there are detriments to it as well.
Yeah, you know, it's quite common for NDEs, for instance, to come back. And even though they may have some pretty severe injuries that they may never fully recover from, they have what doctors would characterize as miraculous healings. And of course, the medical community has a term for this to dismiss its importance and significance. You know, you give it a name and that makes it sound like, well, we know what's going on. And they really don't, but they call it spontaneous remission or spontaneous recovery.
Right.
And it is quite common for a person who's been in a severe accident or had some sort of severe medical trauma to be in the hospital. They come back from their NDEs and have these miraculously fast healings that baffle their doctors. Well, right. The reason is when you have your NDE, your energy is put into this very high vibrational state. And when you come back, it's there. And when your spirit's in a high vibrational, healthy, balanced state, that projects onto the body and can cause very quick healing. And of course, we have the capability to talk to our body and to talk to ourselves and to cause ourselves to heal just with our own power. We're creator gods, just like the big God. And we have the ability to change our bodies and to heal them.
What you described actually did happen to one of my closest friends. My friend Lisa Denton, who was a powerful intuitive and healer at this point, many years later, this is when she was still, I think, a teenager, and she was in a traffic accident and had a very bad physical result, but she did have an NDE, and she really did get to a beautiful place and experience the wonder of other dimensions. But when she came back, they told her that she would have to be in a body cast for maybe even a year. Because she was so badly broken. And then a very short time later, they said, "Holy smokes, you don't need that anymore. you can go about your life." And it was like, what happened? And so that's exactly what you were talking about. It's wonderful when you know when you meet people who have these experiences and you see their genuine nature about it, you don't take them that lightly.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, when we talk about evidence of NDEs, you know, I had 25 years as sort of an engineering consultant, but I also had sales integrated with that. I was a power plant consultant, and I tried to get customers where it would work to put in these power plants. And I took training on how to spot a lie. And, you know, these people who talk about their NDEs, they don't really display any of the common signs of a person lying. As a matter of fact, it's the exact opposite. They, have a lot of genuineness, and, you know, they get very emotional when they talk about the beauty of heaven, and they'll cry. And, you know, that's hard to fabricate if these people are making it up. It's really hard to, you know, to make up the signs of being genuine. Most people aren't that good with their acting abilities. You know, acting is a very difficult thing. Very few people are really good at it, where, you know, you get somebody in a movie and they're genuinely convincing you that they're this other character. Well, these people who report their NDEs, they're being genuine about it. As a matter of fact, a lot of them don't even want to talk about it because they think nobody's going to believe them. Well, why would you make up a lie and then not talk about it? You know, that doesn't make any
sense. Well, let's talk about that too. That how stuck are people in their third dimensional normal, what they call normal life, to not want to believe anyone who has these experiences?
Well, I mean, anytime you get something that's outside of sort of the cultural group of beliefs, you know, the paradigm of beliefs of society, you get pushback. And this is nothing new. I mean, over 500 years ago, a very brilliant man worked out the math when looking at the stars and the planets, and he wrote a book called On the Revolution of the Celestial Spheres. And he said, well, we're not the center of the universe with the sun and the stars going around us. We're going around the sun at 90 miles a second. Well, he was looked at like a mad scientist. You know, you're crazy. You're off your rocker. He had to delay the publishing of his book until after his death, because of the political and social firestorm it would create. And of course, he was being threatened by the Catholic Church to be excommunicated. And that was, you know, you'd lose your funding as a scientist if that happened. Of course, that was Nicholas Copernicus, you know. And in the 1800s, early 1800s, Richard Owen examined large bone and teeth fragments. And he speculated there were once giant lizards that roamed the earth that he called Dinosauria. And everybody thought it was a hoax, you know, he was making up to get money. And of course, even as late as 1912, Alfred Wegener first suggested the idea that continents are slowly drifting across the surface of the earth. You know, continents drifting, please. Of course, he turned out to be right. So any discovery where the scientist to understand that discovery has to contemplate what is absurd, what seems to us to be absurd, is going to be viewed as crazy or unbelievable by the rest of society. But it takes time for them to come along. Science is always behind spirituality, and they will eventually catch up. You know, 150 years from now, it's going to be common knowledge that we are little facets of God coming down here and pretending to be human. And, you know, we're never going to die. You know, these are just shells that we occupy temporarily, but that is not a commonly held belief today.
Right. And over the years, a lot of new breakthroughs in scientific discoveries, which hold new paradigms, take many, many decades, actually, to be accepted. And so hard for people to accept anything out of the norm. And it's amazing how limited many humans are, and it's understandable, because our survival mechanisms are always at play, and
yes,
we need to survive with what's familiar. And if you introduce, and I wonder what it is about us personalities that are breaking new territory, exploring the unknown, that frightens others and carries such disaffection in the world.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, you know, when you said about these experiences being so unbelievable and our survival mechanism. I think it's part of the survival mechanism, because if you think about it, we don't have, you know, sharp claws or, you know, big teeth. You know, we're not nearly as strong as like an ape or something like that. We became the dominant species on the planet because we cooperate with each other. We're a community. You know, it's in our DNA to help each other, to be a community, to be our brother's keeper. And so we all know that if we lose our connection to others, we're toast. I mean, how many human beings, if they were left on their own, could survive without the help of another? You know, our food, our clothing, our housing, all that comes from cooperation with others. And so when you talk about a story like an NDE that sounds absolutely crazy, there's a progression that happens that's part of the survival mechanism. The person listening says, this is crazy. So this person is crazy. They could be dangerous. I need to get away from them. There's a fear of being shunned, and you lose your connection. So people learn to shut up about it, because our connection to others and being accepted in the group that we're in, or in the country or whatever, or even just our own family to survive. Well, you don't want to jeopardize that.
It's interesting, because there are three different concepts of community that are part of the human design system, which I'm an analyst of. And so one is tribal mentality. A second is collective mentality. And the third is individual mentality. And so individuals have a very tough time being accepted by the tribes and the collectives, because we are the people who speak outside of the box. And what's interesting, a tribal mentality is more fearful than collective. So tribal mentality is based on protecting the tribe at all costs, win, lose, willing to sacrifice others for the benefit of the tribe. Whereas the collective mentality is more sharing and willing to listen, willing to create win-win out of circumstances. So there's win-lose, win-win, and then there are the individuals who are just trying to fit in because they know things that no one else knows.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, in the past, you know, hundreds of years ago, what was normal is that you had to attach yourself to a group, whether it was an extended family or an army or a city or a country or even something as big as the Roman Empire. And then you made yourself as strong as possible in that group. And then you took from others by force. And you had to do that to survive. Well, what's happening now is there's a new paradigm with our manufacturing capabilities, with our amazing communication abilities, with our technology. The new paradigm is this: there is enough for everyone. We no longer need to fight each other to compete and to survive. What we have right now is that old mentality causing problems. And cooperation now is replacing the old mentality of competition. And that's going to be a tough transition. And it's going to require trust, and it's going to require us to all be in a consciousness where we recognize that all human beings are connected, and that if I harm another human being in a business deal, if I screw them over or whatever, I'm harming the collective, and therefore I'm harming myself. And if I help another human being, I'm helping all of humanity, and I'm helping myself as well. And once we understand that common connection, you know, we're not going to allow things to happen like 50,000 homeless people on the streets of Los Angeles. I mean, that's low-hanging fruit.
Right.
Take care of those people, and yet you raise the consciousness of humanity.
Right. And that's collective thinking. Mm-hmm. Because tribal thinking is protect the tribe at all costs. If there are people who don't belong in the tribe, kill them off, sacrifice them. And there's too much tribal mentality going on in the world right
now. Oh, yeah. And what you have now is something very unusual, which is for the first time in history, the bulk of the people, they don't want war. You know, I mean, let's face it, if women were in charge of the planet instead of men, they wouldn't be sending their sons and daughters to die on the battlefield. And so you have leaders who are trying to drag us back in the old consciousness and drag us back into war. Right. And the people don't want that. The people of Russia and the people of Ukraine, most of them don't want a war. That's the leaders doing that.
Right.
And it's sad, and it's going to end. The war is going to have to end. It's on its way out.
Right. So we're becoming more and more sophisticated. And it's beautiful to see, to live in hope.
Well, I have great hope for humanity. I mean, I've heard from near-death experiences that in about 150 years, it's going to be this peaceful utopia. I mean, some people think that, you know, when we ascend as a species, we're all going to be, you know, holding hands and singing kumbaya. No, we're still going to have our disagreements, but we're going to be like a family that really loves each other and is healthy in the way they deal with each other. They may have disagreements. They may have arguments. You know, the brothers and sisters may get mad at each other, not talk to each other for a while, but they're not going to pick up guns and knives and start killing each other. And that's where we're headed. And it's going to be such a big change. If you think about, you know, 150 years ago, how different did Earth look? There's no electricity, no communication like we have today. It was a very different place. People from that time, they wouldn't recognize us today. And I have heard that if an alien looked at the planet today, they would, you know, say, oh, you guys are a mess. You're going to destroy yourselves. You know, you're trashing your environment. You're fighting each other. You know, you're not eating well. You're not taking care of yourselves. You're not taking care of each other. And if that same alien came back 150 years from now and looked at the planet, you know, jaw would drop. What did these people do? How did they get their act together? They really cleaned this place up and made it into a garden paradise. And that's where we're heading.
They could see 150 years from now and say that was true. But let's hope that we don't have to wait until then.
Yeah, I don't know how long it's going to take. We'll see.
Right. But I love the idea that, you know, and we can see growing consciousness over the last couple of decades where life wasn't as treasured with each other as it is nowadays. There's more human rights, there's more compassion, understanding of doing things right for each other.
Absolutely.
So now it's about how do we open up using the work that you're doing, especially being a researcher of NDEs and having so much connection multidimensionally yourself, and understanding that you have to be a voice of this higher knowing.
Yes, and one of the things, I just heard a testimony recently where the guy came back from his NDE and he said, I lost that desire that so many humans have, or that reaction so many humans have. I don't have that need to defend myself, to explain myself, to prove that I'm right and another person is wrong. They lost that, you know? And so when a person becomes spiritual, that tends to happen. They lose that idea of, I've got to convince this person of this higher truth. So, you know, I'll give my talks and people believe it or they don't. And occasionally I'll have somebody that wants to debate me. And I tell them, well, okay, if you're asking a question because you want to know what these guys say, I'll answer it. But, you know, if you're firm in your beliefs, whether it's a religious belief or other set of beliefs, I have no desire to try and get another human being to believe what I believe.
Yeah, and don't try to convince me that dreams don't exist.
You know, and you can't drag somebody in a higher consciousness or to a higher understanding of things. They have to sort of come to it on their own. You know, love does not really challenge or insult another person because of their beliefs. It might facilitate an environment where they can ask questions and learn if they want to explore other beliefs, but it doesn't try and tell the other person they're wrong.
Right.
And so I do my best to try and avoid that.
Lately, I've been doing a lot of work on the consciousness scale that can be measured. So we can measure the different consciousness of people and see where they're at. And what I find is that, you know, or even what I learned recently from my Focus Life Force Energy friends who are experts at consciousness levels, said the consciousness of the whole planet on a scale of 1 to 1,000 is at 190. Mm-hmm. That's the general consciousness of the population. And many of us are well over that. Many people are 300 range, 400 range, and a few people are in the 500 range. And that, to go higher than that is very unusual. But it's understandable if the norm is 190, that we can understand it. So if we can measure, I like to measure the consciousness of different people I'm talking with, not in front of them, but by, on my own, and I know the level that I'm talking to, then I'm more compassionate and accepting that they can't grasp things that other people can grasp.
Yeah, you know, I've heard from heaven that in terms of our spiritual maturity, we are about at the level of a two-year-old. You know, we're just learning not to hit the other kids in the sandbox. And so we're just turning this corner where we're starting to learn not to fight each other, to be considerate and kind of others and that kind of thing.
That's a good way to say that. So we're getting close to the end of the show, and you're such a fascinating guy that people will probably want to know more about you and what you're doing. So how can they do that?
Well, my website, godtookmyclothes.com, has a 2-chapter preview of my book. It's also got a link to my spiritual counseling, and my email is there. And I do have a discount program for financial hardship for spiritual counseling. And then, of course, at the time of this recording, I'm still answering all emails. I can't type the emails out anymore. It's too much work. So I respond with an audio message. So if anybody has a question they want answered, they can just send me an email and I'll answer it with an audio response. And that's 100% free.
And another time, when we still have time, we don't now, I want to know why your website is named God Took My Clothes, because that in itself says a lot.
Yeah. Well, the first Andy ever heard, he ended up in heaven naked.
Yeah, so why not?
That's where it came from.
Yeah, so. Okay. Yeah, but what does that mean in terms of us needing to be clothed? And certainly in you know, Aboriginal societies, clothing wasn't very important.
Yeah, we kind of have a hang up about nudity in our culture.
Yeah, you
know, nobody like looks at a dog walking down the street and says, "It's a naked dog, put some clothes on," you know, but that's what we say about humans, right? So we still have hang ups about that.
But, fascinating.
Yeah, but it's who you really are. It's the core of who we are. And the core of who we are, not these bodies. The naked truth is we are powerful spiritual beings, children of our Father, who is the same powerful spiritual eternal entity. And we are eternal just like him. We have always existed, we always will.
Yeah, I love that. You know, it's a good overview. At the same time, many of us wear clothing to differentiate ourselves and to, you know, to be stylish or whatever it is we need. But so we're really at the end of the show. David Such, I'm so happy to talk with you. Thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
It's always a pleasure being here, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.live. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you. And thanks so much for listening.